And now, it's time for the Talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning. It's nearly 5 minutes past nine on this Monday, the 1st of December. How are you all keeping? I hope you had a wonderful weekend as we awake and move around on what is a dull Northwest this morning. 086 60 25,000. Our lines are open for you right now. So we want you to comment as we get through the topics of the day. Of course, you know what we do here, don't we? Don't you? We talk of all the news stories that are important to you, local or national. We really enjoy your comments as they come in throughout the course of the morning, and we want you involved in that. And of course, great conversations that matter to you, people from around the Northwest. Maybe they've achieved something special, or there's something in their life that they want to talk about to help others, all that type of stuff. We love being able to facilitate all of that. So the text and WhatsApp line, 086 60 25,000. If you prefer to give us a call, you can do so on 07491 25,000. And emails come in to us at comments@highlandradio.com. Right, let's have a look at the newspapers this morning. We'll go with the front page of the Derry People Donegal News. And plans for a large new childcare facility in East Donegal have been overturned after Transport Infrastructure Ireland successfully appealed the planned development to Commission Planala. Donegal County Council had granted conditional planning approval in July 2024 for the redevelopment of the River Club premises in Castlefin into a childcare facility. The plans include a facility with a maximum capacity of over 100 children and up to 20 staff members, and that site located along the N15 National Primary Road. And we all know the importance of childcare and childcare facilities in certain areas around the county, all areas in fact. TII, though, they appealed to on Commission Planala, and Commission Planala has recommended that permission be refused, citing serious road safety concerns. The planned development relied on access directly from a section of the N15 where 100-kilometre speed limit applies. But is there not a situation, though, whereby that could be taken into consideration and maybe measures put in place to ensure that a really important piece of infrastructure, and it's strange talking about a services infrastructure, but in this day and age to have childcare facilities in good spaces is so important. Could the TII not have said, well, we could potentially maybe make these changes to... Anyway, I don't know. Because what happens, this is often, you know, the TII build roads along these premises, you know, outside schools and all that type of stuff. And then we have to campaign for years to try and get them to make some changes to the road to make it safer. Here we have a situation where I suppose the roles have been reversed, whereby there is an important piece of service infrastructure being put in place. You know, could the TII not say, well, if we had built the road past this, we'd have had to consider this, that and done. Could they not have done that and let it go through? I don't know. Maybe there's elements to that project that I'm missing. But a little bit of joined up thinking might have helped. Anyway, the Derry News this morning. A man has appeared in court accused of attempting to murder a police officer in Northern Ireland with a knife. Owen Carlin, 21, from Cullion Lane in Derry, appeared at Dungana Magistrates Court on Saturday. It follows an incident in which police officers were attacked at a property in the early hours of Thursday. One officer was stabbed in the leg and there was an attempt to stab another in the chest. Carlin appeared via video link from the custody suite at Waterside PSNI station, and reading some of those reports, those police very lucky to have avoided a very serious injury. Let's get on to the Nationals now. There's a bit of a row brewing, or has been brewing, down in Dublin. Someone had taken the notion of changing a park, which was named with Israeli connections. I'll get into that into the article. Obviously the Israeli government had their say in relation to this. And as it turns out, the procedures weren't exactly followed as they should have been. So the plans for the time being have been shelved. So the Times tells us the plans to remove the name of a former president of Israel from a public park in Rathgar, South Dublin, are to be suspended following a weekend of national and international pressure on Dublin City Council. Herzog Park was named in 1995 in honour of Belfast-born Jane Herzog, Israel's president from 1983 to 1993, who spent his early childhood in Dublin when his father was Chief Rabbi of Ireland. A recommendation by the council's cross-party commemorations committee to remove the Herzog name from the park was to go to council for approval this evening. However, yesterday evening, council chief executive Richard Shakespeare said he was proposing to withdraw the item from tonight's agenda and refer it back to the commemorations committee because the current legislative procedures had not been followed, which is, you know, I mean, as I say, the Irish government had their say, the Israeli government had their say on X, and now all of a sudden there's been a procedural issue and that won't go ahead. So people will draw their own conclusions in relation to that. The Irish Independent reports that the threat of Islamist terrorist radicalisation among young people in Ireland is growing, according to the head of the Garda Síochána Special Detective Unit. Detective Chief Superintendent Brian Wood said that the SDU has been involved in at least 10 interventions in the last number of months in relation to radicalisation and religious extremism. This is one of our main priorities and we would commit resources to it and work with the National Community Policing Unit as well as local Garda units in an attempt to make an early intervention, the senior detective said. No prosecutions have resulted in any of the early interventions so far, with Gardaí focusing predominantly on engaging with the young person at risk of radicalisation. So what we'll have seen in the past is in other countries, thankfully I can't recall a very serious incident here, is that someone might be radicalised. And then in the past we've seen knife attacks where people, there's been multiple fatalities or what have you. It hasn't happened here, but obviously the Gardaí are concerned that it might. And like every religion, there are different levels of interpretation of it moderate views and extreme views. But obviously the Gardaí have had 10 interventions in relation to radicalisation. Everyone is risk assessed, reading on the quote here, by us, and prosecutions will depend on the level of threat that has been identified, as well as a number of other factors, Detective Chief Superintendent Wood said. In recent times, Ireland has seen isolated incidents of extreme violence by young males who have been radicalised online to become involved in Islamist terrorism. On to the Irish Daily Mail now, and this is a story that the Mail's covered before, and it really is quite, I wouldn't say bizarre, but quite worrying, certainly worrying, but it's just the details of it seem bizarre. Seven female paramedics have come forward to lift the lid on an alleged sexual predator in the service who they claim has been drugging colleagues for almost a decade to abuse them. The man at the centre of a Garda investigation into the sexual assault at a hospital and giving women the powerful relaxation midazolam is often prescribed to induce memory loss so patients will not remember any discomfort or undesirable effects that may occur after a surgery. Well, in October it was revealed the man was still working for the National Ambulance Service and has remained on full pay despite the allegations. However, he has been banned from interacting with patients at the hospital in the east of the country until investigations are over. The Irish Daily Mail has been contacted by the women who all claim they were either a victim of his or witnessed him being inappropriate towards colleagues. And yet he's still at work, which I suppose innocent until proven guilty and all that. But obviously there's concern enough that he's not interacting with patients. As I say, it's a really interesting story that, for all the wrong reasons, if you know where I'm coming from. Farmers might be concerned about the first suspected blue tongue virus, or maybe we all should. It's a blue tongue virus outbreak on the island of Ireland. It's the first and it's under investigation. The disease is believed to be affecting two cows near Bangor in County Down. On Saturday, Stormont's Department of Agriculture, Environment and Rural Affairs introduced a 20-kilometre temporary control zone, and moving susceptible species in or out of it is now prohibited. A general license is available that allows animals to cross the boundary if they are going directly to slaughter. Blue tongue is an animal disease that affects livestock, including cattle and sheep, as well as goats, deer and llamas. Symptoms include a blue and swollen tongue, fever-induced milk yield and, in most cases, death. So two cows have been infected in County Down. We wouldn't want to see that spreading, I'm sure. But I do note, I imagine those in the farming community keeping a close eye in relation to that. This is not based up here, but it's something I think that's happening down the country in Kerry, I believe it is, that you might be interested in, because there's lots of people contact us on a regular basis, put off by very loud cars, loud engines, modified exhausts. And a number of drivers are facing hefty fines and prosecution after a week and Garda checkpoint blitz targeting cars with illegal modifications. It's the Kerry Road Policing Unit responsible for it, and they held the operations in Killarney with officers keeping a sharp eye out for a range of road traffic offences. Many vehicles were given thorough checks to make sure everything was up to scratch. Now, we do tend to do this, certainly high profile, around the Donegal International Rally. I'm not sure if it happens outside of that weekend. But the more seasoned officers, however, could spot illegal mods on cars with just a glance, and in some cases they could even hear them coming. At least that was what happened with one vehicle, where officers could tell right away that it had an excessive noisy exhaust making sounds well above Ireland's 72 decibel limit. How loud is 72 decibels? I'd be interested in that. And finally, not trying to put you off your turkey 25 days out, but a record number of rats are set to invade homes across Ireland this festive season. Experts have warned there were almost twice as many infestations this month as there were in November last year. Pest control services have ordered hundreds of extra traps and even put teams of technicians on standby to work on Christmas Day to deal with the anticipated plague of rodents. Now, not surprisingly, it is a pest control organisation that's released that information, but maybe you're seeing more rats about, more mice. Certainly seeing them dart across the road more than I might have in the past. Right, I'm going to give you a quick mention of a competition we've got running on the show here now before we take a break and welcome our next guest on, and it's the Cadbury Secret Santa. So we've teamed up with Cadbury Secret Santa, who's over 20,000 bars to give away this year. Have you ever received one? I haven't, but I do know people that have had or have. To celebrate the return of Secret Santa, we have €500 to give away on Friday. That's €250 for you and €250 for your someone special. So it's not bad, is it? 500 quid up for grabs on Friday. So to be in to win, all you need to do is tell us why you would want to surprise someone special with a Secret Santa bar this year. Why do they deserve it? And we might read some of these out over the course of the week, if you don't mind. And just to give you a sense of why people are important to other people. So what good reason do you have to surprise someone with a Cadbury Secret Santa bar? Tell us about someone in your life who deserved the Secret Santa bar this year. So you could win €250 for you and then the person that you're nominating. So 250 quid each. And it's all with thanks to Cadbury Secret Santa. And don't forget, if you want to send a bar to someone in secret, look out for the special posters all around our beautiful region. So, who do you want to nominate? Why would they deserve a Secret Santa bar? Text or WhatsApp 086 60 25000, and you can email comments at highlandradio.com. And one winner every day will go into the draw on Friday for €250 for themselves and €250 voucher, one for all voucher for someone special. All right, that's all. Thanks to our friends at Cadbury Secret Santa. Now, we're joined on the programme by Jim McLaughlin, who is a suckler farmer. And it's in the context of the Mercosur deal, which seems to be being fast-tracked, or not fast-tracked, but certainly pushed through at a European level. There's a lot of benefits for lots of countries, right? So if your country relies heavily on car manufacturing, like Germany, for an example, or the creation of white goods, a number of countries could benefit that. Part of this deal, as an example, would be it would open up the market for those goods into Brazil. But at what cost? The Brazilians want to be able to export beef into the European Union as part of that deal. And you would have read last week, or you certainly would have heard anyway, in the Irish Farmers Journal, that the regulation of beef in Brazil is actually really quite poor in terms of hormones getting into the animals, antibiotics, etc., etc. And there is that concern that if that enters our food supply here, you know, it could have negative impacts. So suffice to say, there's a lot of opposition to it. But unfortunately, for those who are opposed to it, there's a lot of money in this going in the other direction. Jim McLaughlin, as I mentioned, a Sutcliffe farmer. Just trying to set it up, Jim, there for, you know, where we're at the moment. And I don't know if you agree or disagree, but what do you believe the impact of this might be?
Good morning, Hillary Gray, and good morning to your listeners. Listen, hey, as a small farmer, hey, and a man of the land, there's a lot of negative things can happen here. And I'd be very, very afraid that the small farmer in Ireland could become sacrificial lamb here. Like, at the end of the day, consumers have a big fact to play in this here. Like, Irish farmers for the last 30 years have been very, very good. They've been practicing a lot of environmental issues, antibiotic issues, animal remedies, spread and slurry, feedstuffs. We've produced a top end product there, like, that can't be matched. Like, all we're looking for here is fair play. The product of Brazil's producing, there's no overseeing it. There's no watching what the jag into that animal. There's no registration of calf births. There's nothing, you know, practically nothing. And that's not sour grapes now. I'm only speaking, all I want is fair play here. I don't want to see the Irish farmer becoming the sacrificial lamb. I don't want to see farming ending in Ireland. But farming's heading down a bad road in Ireland, because the average age of a farmer in Ireland at the moment is 63, and that's the age I am. And I have nobody coming behind. So if farming was good and the outlook was good, there'd be plenty of young boys looking to farm.
I think us as consumers need to be careful here too, Jim, because of course we are in a cost of living price crisis, and we all know the price of, you know, lean ground beef, steaks, whatever, is really, it is high at the moment, but it's a quality product. You know, next year, we could see side by side, you know, Brazilian beef, Irish beef. We don't. Will it be clearly marked? Will we know which is which? Maybe the Brazilian beef will be cheaper, and that then creates.
Brazilian beef.
Go ahead. Yeah.
The Brazilian beef will be cheaper.
So
it will be cheaper,
what that does then? What that does then? It makes Irish farmers say, "Well, we can't compete with all the hoops we have to jump through. We're going to have to raise our cattle in a different way." So it drives. Potentially drives the overall quality down, because there's not enough of us, Jim, that are prepared to spend the little money we have left to back the Irish farmer, if that makes sense, when there's a product beside it much cheaper.
I totally appreciate that, but in my feeling, the danger of that is if we're going to have to compete with the Brazilian beef, as you said, the Irish farmer there might have to change his practice. Like, do we go to the way the Brazilians produce the beef, and do we go to a cheap way of farming? Like, it's not cheap, like, we're governed pretty strongly, and there's a lot of rules, there's a lot of regulations. And listen, the Irish farmers abiding to all them rules and regulations. And, we're producing a grade-A product here. I would hate to think that the last 30 years with all the inspections and all the ticking of boxes and writing everything down and recording if a beast was sick. At the end of the day, there's another big issue here. In Brazil, there could be 5,000 cattle in the one field. And a Brazilian farmer can head to the forest today and they can cut down 2,000 acres of trees. There's mass deforestation in Brazil. Now, that deforestation creates problems with the ecosystem, with animals, small animals. You have a problem then with carbon. People's tuned in now, even the children in school are on about emissions, global warming, climate change and stuff. In Ireland, the Irish farmer has collectively, the milkman, the dairyman, the porkman, the sheepman, the poultryman, we've all bought into a thing called sequestration, which allows the trees to absorb the carbon and store the carbon. But in Brazil, they're cutting down the trees.
Well, just in relation to that, I said this years and years ago, and it's not that I knew and other people didn't, but it's just I've got a seat to sit in and say these things. It's remarkable that in this country, there are so many industries that contribute to the climate in a negative way. Farming, I think farming has been the one industry that has done as much as it possibly can to limit, but still farmers are seen
can't
as the bad guys.
Farmers yeah, can't do anymore.
But just to make the point, farmers are seen as bad guys. And then the plan is, after all that crap farmers have had to listen to, the plan is to spend a fortune on diesel, whatever fuel it might be, to ship beef all the way from Brazil to the EU, and at the same time, as you quite rightly pointed out, encourage the destruction of the world's lungs, right? That's what they're described as, to do so.
100%, 100%.
And other countries can sell fridges, washing machines and cars into Brazil. If I was a farmer, I'd be going like, are you taking the absolute pee here?
Experiment, like the other big issue here, it's a massive issue, like, and nobody talks about animal welfare. Like, animal welfare and a farmer's eye in Ireland is top of the list. Like, at the end of the day, if the farmer himself is actually a vet, because he's the man that first notices his animal sick, or it's not the same, it's not eating right, and then he gets the vet. Animal welfare is massive. Ireland, like, there's too many rules. There's a bit of over-regulation towards farmers as well. Like, some of the rules are, for the want of a better word, some of the words are draconian. Like, you have the slurry issue there. Like, this is a big time of year now for farmers. Well, you're a suckler farmer, a dairy farmer. Your cattle are indoors now for maybe 7 months. So come February or March, your slurry could be starting to build up and your tanks could be starting to maybe overflow in some cases. And you could be within a closed period, you mightn't be allowed to spread the slurry. But within that closed period, the weather could be good, the ground could be dry, the conditions are more favourable for spreading the slurry if the slurry can't get to waterways. But no, don't spread that slurry for 3 weeks. 3 weeks' time, the ground's wet, saturated, there's muck everywhere, the farmer has to cross the public road to get the slurry out, and then you annoy commuters and stuff. There's a lot of over-regulation.
But we're seeing, Jim, and I'm an outsider looking on because I don't have a farm. This is a very similar conversation to what we're having about the fishing industry. Over-regulation in Ireland and to get deals like Brexit over the line, the Irish fishing industry feel that they are the sacrificial lamb or they are the European bargaining chip. And yet here we are again talking about farming, over-regulation, tightening of nitrates limits, all that kind of stuff. And again, it would seem to get this deal over the line, it is the farmer and the Irish farmer that's going to pick up the tab again. It's very, very similar as well, too. You talk, Jim, about no one coming behind you to... we've lost a generation of fishermen, whether they're men or women fishermen, right? We're losing that next...
Yeah,
and we're losing that generation of farmers. As you say, you're not on your own. Who's coming behind you? And I think people even not involved in farming should understand what direction then the country is going, what difference it would make in rural communities if the farmer isn't there to care for the land or to raise the animals.
Well, you see, the problem, there's another element to the farming. Like, farming's a way of life. Like, for me, it's a way of life. There's a great bond between you and the animals. Like, people don't see the nights you sit up with a cow waiting under the calf, and that can go horribly wrong. You could have a dead calf or a dead cow, but that's all part of farming. And there's a mental health issue with farming. It can become very tiring. You can get stressed. But we keep going. We keep farming. And we want to keep farming. We want it. It's part of our culture. It's part of the fabric of life. Like, it's a lovely way of life. Like, and I just see it. The rules are going to stop it.
What do you predict, say, for instance, 5 years from now, which is short term, what impact do you think this deal would have when it goes through? Because I don't think anything's going to stop it at this stage because there's too much money involved. What do you think it means for the Irish grass-fed beef in 4 or 5 years?
I think Brussels is going to have to make more favourable decisions to the member states. The national suckler herd in Ireland demands declining by about 10% per year. So in 5 years' time, there could be maybe 300,000 less suckler cows if the current trends keep going. There's going to be a world shortage of food. So the companies like in the Merseyside region are going to get an advantage because they're going to be able to push their big producers. They're going to be able to push into weaker countries like us. As I say, people need food. Like, I think the Irish farmer is going to get the wrong end of the stick here because we spent the last 30 years trying to produce top-end food, and now it's not going to matter. A cheap bit of food is going to be beside us, and there's going to be no records or no none for it. Like.
Yeah, and
But I think
also as consumers need to take more of an interest, because as I say, that Irish Farmers Journal report was very, very clear. They were able to go in and buy antibiotics, all manner of drugs, you know, no receipts, no nothing required. It was just open season. Right, okay, Jim, listen, thank you. Yes, go ahead.
Buy antibiotics from Brazil and those to buy Rice Krispies.
Yeah. That's not good.
No, it's not good. No, like, and there's another thing. Like, we've been told, people have been encouraged to buy electric cars and for the past 5 or 6 years. Like, the Council of Exchequer in England just announced this morning that anybody with an electric car has to pay 3p a mile tax. So, where I live here now, that means it'll come out to Ireland now too. That means if I drive Letterkenny and back, I have to pay €2 tax because of my electric car.
I worked it out. I think it's about £800 to £900 a year extra on 30,000 kilometres or 30,000 miles, which is on top of.
That's not encouraging people to think into global warming or climate change or stuff.
But the Brits are desperate at the moment. They're banjaxed financially, and it's all because of some of the decisions.
England's in bad shape, man.
All right, Jim, lovely to chat. Yeah, go ahead.
All right, Craig, can you give me another 15 seconds there?
Go on, yes. I'm not going to do you over like the EU is. Go on, talk.
No, unless I just want to say something. Hey, this is on the mouth of Christmas now, like, it's a nice time of year for most people. And it is for me, right?
Mm.
But I'd just like to say, I have a great time for alcoholism. I'm an alcoholic myself. And I know Christmas can be a very hard time for people that's going through alcohol issues, right? Mm. But speaking from my own personal life, I'm a recovered alcoholic, and life's been good to me. And I have 5 children now and 4 grandchildren that I wouldn't have if I hadn't got help. And just if maybe someone listener out there today could be listening to this conversation, and if I can help somebody now with a drink problem and make their Christmas any way bit easier, I'll gladly do that.
What do you suggest they do to recognise that they are an alcoholic?
Well, the first thing they do, the most important thing they can do is lift the phone and ring somebody like me. Or there is help. Alcoholism can be a very, very, very dark place. But I can tell you one thing. I'm one of the happiest alcoholics in the world. And see, when the light does come on, it's great.
Yeah.
There is another life. And the stigma too, there is no stigma. Wear the badge. Put the badge on.
Yeah.
I'm an alcoholic. You could be a diabetic. You could be someone else.
Yeah.
Go for it. It's a horrible disease. Hey, it's a horrible disease. People can lose their marriage, their children, their family life. And it's not a nice place to be now if all you can see is alcohol and you don't see the other side of it. I'm not preaching temperance here or anything like that. I love going out to people that drink.
You can't handle it. I think everyone can recognise the difference between being able to go in and have one or two pints or a glass of wine and then, you know, not being able to go home or to spend all the money you have or open a second bottle every other night.
It's just so sad. Every wee village in Ireland has 2 or 3 people at the moment. Mm. It's a massive problem. And I would like to put my back to the wheel and help out, you know.
All right, Jim. And did you use the AA program or go down a different route?
I actually spent almost 3 months in St. Collins in Letterkenny drying out. If I love the 16th of January, I'll be 40 years sober.
Well done. That's astonishing.
It's good. Hey, it's a great feeling. Hey, and I would class myself as, I'm not bumming here, but I would class myself as a philanthropist. Hey, and I have great understanding of the word empathy.
Yeah.
Empathy is a massive word that people don't get a grasp of.
Well, what is it, in your view?
Empathy is listening to another person's opinion and respecting what they're saying. And, it's something that's missing in life,
Yeah. We judge people very quickly as well, rather than maybe extending a...
Oh, we do. Of course we do. We'll go back to the mayor's score deal. The people making the decisions in Brussels and even in America now that's overseeing the mayor's score deal, there's a lot of clowns involved in this. There's people that don't know what they're doing. Me personally, if I took my children to a circus in Letterkenny tomorrow and there's no clowns there, But Matt Sullivan will be very disappointed and I'll be looking for my money back. But you've got, I'll tell you, when you go to Brussels, you'll be disappointed because there's plenty of clowns there.
Jim, listen, best of luck for your anniversary, if you call it that, I don't know. But that'll be 40 Christmases sober.
Listen, I've been an alcoholic every day. Every day is a new day.
Yeah. And you've been blessed with a wonderful family too. All right, Jim, you're so right. You know, you're also right that because we talk about lots of different diseases on this show. And listen, people are very brave, if you want to call it that, and talk about alcoholism, the disease that it is. But there's certain diseases that people can talk freely about or feel they can. And alcoholism, it's often done with anonymity. And I can understand that. And we're not judging that. But it's funny because it is just another illness. It's another disease.
We need to get rid of the stigma. We need to get rid of it. I'll tell you now, hey, from experience, and I do help a lot of people that has alcohol problems.
Yeah.
I say alcoholism is one of the worst diseases in the world.
Mm.
I think alcoholism is worse than cancer.
Mm.
Because, like, go out for a bit, if you're told you have cancer today, like, your wife and your children will do, man, they'll give you a better quality of life. You'll get away at a family holiday. You might make it. Treatment could help
you.
Most
likely will, yeah.
But if you're an alcoholic, like, sometimes, a lot of the time, people go the fault up high and they end up death. But now there's a lot of losses.
I know the analogy you're making there. It's the post treatment care or I do understand what you're saying, Jim. Listen, thanks very much for chatting to me. I appreciate your time, Jim, and best luck and happy Christmas to you.
Jim, you Greg, thank you.
Bye bye. Jim McLaughlin there, a suckler farmer, and also with some great words of. Some great words of advice there. And there's lots of phone lines that you can ring if you come off the back of the weekend and, you know, you don't remember what you were at or where you were at, and it's something that you do on a regular occasion and you think, you know what, there has to be something else other than that. Give someone like Jim a ring or the AA or any of the other kind of telephone numbers that are out there and, you know, get on a different path for yourself, perhaps, potentially. Very sad news over the weekend. Two men died in a collision involving a bus and a car in County Fermanagh. It was on Friday. The incident occurred on the Derry Lynn Road in Enniskillen shortly after 7 p.m. Police said the two men who died were travelling in the car. The Bus Éireann Expressway coach was en route from Dublin to Donegal at the time. So, of course, initially our thoughts and prayers are with the two men and their families. But a very scary incident for all involved. Lisa joins me on the programme now. Lisa, thanks for chatting to me this morning.
Hi, Greg. Hi.
Your daughter was on that bus that was involved in that collision in which those two men sadly lost their lives. What was Dervla's experience?
Yeah, Dervla was just, she was up in Donegal for a few days and coming back down to Dublin. She's 15. So she... it's just a horrendous bang, kind of was shot forward and phoned me in a panic. But they were on the bus for about 2 hours and the PSNI came, the ambulance came. But there was a lovely girl, Alana, in her 20s, who really calmed Dervla down, was very calming to all the passengers, made sure Dervla didn't look out, which was a complete write-off. God love the poor man. And really just helped her through it. And I was just wanting to thank Alana. I don't know who she is, but we just wanted to reach out. And, I don't think Dervla would have got through it without her because she was really good to her.
Yeah, you needed someone like that with you not being there to sort of step in and look after her. And Alana did that for you. So as a mum, you know, that's a very special thing.
Absolutely, absolutely. I was on the phone to Dervla trying to keep her calm during it. But when I was driving up from Dublin at the time, it's very hard to... You know, you just want to put your arms around her. She was just so upset. But Alana was great. Dervla was talking about her the whole way back. Yeah.
And obviously, Dervla will have to work through the emotional experience that she's had. Physically, you said she was jolted forward. Is she okay?
It's fine. She's a little banged to her head, but she had her seatbelt on, thank God.
Very good.
So she was checked out and it was all fine. It was
just, and she's back to school today.
Small bruise.
So you are speaking to me with a view to sort of, I suppose, tracking down and being able to thank Alana personally. She's in her mid-20s. Her mother lives in Donegal Town. Alana herself lives in Dublin. So maybe she was heading back for the weekend after a visit. You just want to be able to chat to her, acknowledge her?
Exactly.
Okay.
Just acknowledge her, just to say thanks. I think she did offer Dervla her number, but Dervla didn't want to take it at the time. Thinking she should have then.
She was up to high dough.
Up to high dough. She didn't know what was going on. But I just looked to really show my appreciation. I mean, she really stepped up and was wonderful. I just wanted to say thanks, absolutely.
Okay, Lisa, we'll do our best. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Greg.
Take care of yourself. That's fine. Okay. Yeah. All right, bye-bye. That's at least there. She's looking for Alana, who is in her mid-20s. Her mother lives in Donegal Town. Alana herself lives and presumably lives and works or studies in Dublin. And Alana was there for Lisa's daughter, Dervla, in that horrific environment. Dervla travelling back on the bus at 15 years of age. Obviously, ordinarily, hassle-free, perfectly safe. But there was this awful collision on Friday night in which two men lost their lives. And Lisa looking to track Alana down. So if you know Alana or you can pass on a message, maybe Alana doesn't want to. She just wants to be an unsung hero, but she is a hero to that family. So you can get in touch with us, 086 60 25000. And well done, Alana, if you're ever listening to this. You've made a big difference to someone, a family there. 086 60 25000, just to remind you, that is the WhatsApp and the text number. Farmers, obviously, beef farmers are price takers. So the fact that you're seeing a steak in a restaurant or mince in a supermarket at a certain price, it doesn't mean the farmer is making an absolute fortune. Normally, the profit is made further down the line. I'm not saying they're not doing okay, but they're not producing cheap food. They're being regulated and legislated into producing the food that they are producing. Charlie's with me now. Hi, Charlie.
Yes, Craig, how are you?
I'm doing good.
I was just listening to you.
Yeah, go ahead, Charlie. Chat away.
I was just listening to you chatting to Jim there, and there's just two points I wanted to make there. Like you were saying about Irish farmers to produce cheaper food to compete with Brazil. But that's impossible. If the EU wanted to give us the hormones to produce, you could produce beef cheaper than that, but we're not allowed that, and probably rightly so. But at the same time, they can bring in the beef that has the hormones in it, and we're at a disadvantage right away there. So we're,
but how can that beef be sold in the Irish market too? So you've got one beef that has no antibiotics in it, no hormones in it. And of course, the cost that's associated with producing meat at that quality. And then you've got this other stuff coming from a space that, according to recent investigations, there's little to no regulation. I mean, how can those two products sit side by side on the shelf? It's not fair, surely.
Yeah, it's completely not fair, exactly. I mean, why is the question? That's the questions every farmer keeps asking. Why is it allowed? And I suppose it's back to the German engines, diesel engines gone out. There's guys of other they've other things to they want to sell, and we're kind of the pawns that's been put off. But at the same time, the consumer has been hoodwinked over this as well, because you take the antibiotics there, and if I have a sick animal, I would have to go to the vet, and the vet comes out, assesses the animal, says it needs an antibiotic. It needs an antibiotic. The number of that animal is taken down. Okay, so that animal, so I'm not allowed to let's say kill that animal for whatever 30 days or whatever the withdrawal period is, and that rightly so. In Brazil they can buy antibiotics. They can buy antibiotics that we wouldn't even be allowed to use here off the counter. So there's nothing to stop a farmer in Brazil injecting an animal and killing it the next day. Now, the residues in that antibiotics are still in that beef, and that beef comes into Ireland. People are consuming it. There's the residues in it. People would get immune to that antibiotic and we've no other line of defence. Mm. That's their last line of defence. Like
one
me
other
as
thing.
A father and a
yeah, I was going to ask.
Just like I wanted
to make that point.
But me as a father and a husband as and a father, like you know, I don't want my children or my wife. You're going into hospital and you're sick, and you know if you are eating that meat and you're becoming immune to it, you know, and then you are sick. It's no use to you, and you know other line of defence, and that's where we're heading. Like if we go down that way, it's grand that these EU have these regulations, and they are there for a good reason. But then to import the stuff in, it just makes a farce of the whole thing.
Say TB, let's just take that one thing as an example. People will know what happens if a cow is found to have TB, the impact it can have on the herd, the movement of that herd, and potentially you know the future of that herd. There's very, very lackadaisical approach to TB in Brazil, for an example, yet we could be eating
that's another issue, yeah. I mean, all of that's just complete non-regulation. I mean, we've been regulated, you know, and you can argue we're regulated too much or whatever, but there's a reason for it, and fair enough. But like, give us a level playing field, you know, that's all. You know, that's all the farmers are asking for. Mm. Like the same issue even in grain, like you know where the GM we're not allowed to use GM, mm-hmm. like you know, yeah. I mean people would have more crops of GM, but we can import away at the GM crops. You know, it's like we're being farmed with a hand tied behind our back.
Well, who is the food you know? For then? I mean, this is the thing that I don't understand, right? Why is there are so many restrictions on genetically modified grain here, or why, I'm not saying we should get rid of them, why are we so stringent in terms of, you know, disease control, traceability and all that in the Irish meat market? Who is it for? Is it for us? Is it for our exports? And if it's so important, then why can we import meat that's not up to the same mm-hmm. standards? So why are we taking all the initial measures if it really doesn't matter, because a shelf can contain antibiotic and hormone filled beef in one packet and this Irish beef at another, which probably will be, you know, 30-40% more expensive? What's the point of all the regulations if we have an mm-hmm. unregulated sales market then, or what appears to be?
Yeah, that's daft when you say it like that, Craig, like, you know, because it is like we're seen as the country is squeaky clean, and we do everything 100%. We go over and above what we're supposed to be doing, and the EVU would even say we go over and above it. And at the same time, then no problem bringing in other stuff. There's no regulation at all.
I guess it's down to
food is a lot dearer, meat is a lot dearer, and like I'm not saying farmers are doing well at the moment. With the beef, but that's why maybe they're pushing hard to get this stuff in. But there's a health and safety issue on that there as well. Like you know, that's what I feel like. You know,
yeah,
that's my big issue.
And listen, I'm only looking on. This is not an opinion, but we're seeing a system whereby we're seeing fewer farmers producing because farmers are just saying there's no money in this. I'm out. And at the same time, parallel to that, we're seeing big deals for the importation of Brazilian beef. You know, I don't think you have to be a conspiracy theorist to say, well, it's not can't be a coincidence that these two events are happening on the same timeline, you know, where we're seeing huge reductions in herds and yet we're negotiating deals to import beef from the other side of the world.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I mean, the reason why the beef has gone down so much is because, like, the last few years beef has been, there's been no money, the suckler farmer was being crucified, you know, and like, you know, you just can't switch it on and off, like, you know, so the cows were killed, then beef went on, and then a couple of years later then you see the shortage, and the shortage is here now because farmers weren't making money back then, and there was no point in it.
Yeah.
But like, you know, you can't just switch it on now and all of a sudden we're going to have a pile of beef next week. It's going to take a couple of years to bring that up again.
All right.
But that's down to us not be getting enough for beef back then. Now, like I say, they're getting off now, and maybe we will. There'll be more suckler cows getting in now, and maybe we'll do more. But if they import this stuff, that's going to all of a sudden the price
will
drop again.
Then the factories then start saying, "Look, this is what we can pay." All right,
yeah.
Charlie. Listen, thanks for your insight. It's greatly appreciated. We'll be back after the news.